afternoon. We've got a good crowd for such a nice afternoon outside. My name is Sharon, and I serve the village as education lead. And it's my pleasure to introduce Cheryl Chang, environmental engineer, friend of Holden, SciTech committee. I said it right, not sci-fi, SciTech. Someone else said sci-fi earlier, and I'm like, no, that's not right. So thank you. We're going to learn about garbology and what has happened and looking forward.
Great.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you. So, namaste, namaste, which loosely translated means the God, the Spirit of God in me recognizes and welcomes the Spirit of God in you. I want you to remember that in case I say something that annoys you or irritates you. Keep that moment of grace. Well, as Sharon said, I'm Terrell Chang, and for the last 40 years I've been an environmental engineer, which means that Mr. and Mrs. Chang made great sacrifices to send their son to MIT so he could become a garbage man. Very disappointing. Very disappointing. No.
No.
Okay. And I actually wanted to thank Sharon for putting together this week. You'll hear a bunch of really interesting perspectives on the environment and what we are doing to it and what we can do about it. As my good friend Rick, hiding in the back, said, recyclables to encyclicals. So, anyway, thank you for being on the journey with me. Today we're going to have a conversation. You know, they say a picture's worth a thousand words, and a picture means I spend an hour digging in a box of photos and trying to figure out how to scan it to put it in a slideshow. So we're going to use, actually it's kind of neat to use caveman technology. We're sitting around the fire pit, right? I'll take a pointy thing and sketch some things, and we'll just talk, right? Conversation. I want to point out that today's conversation is not about value judgments. I mean, we could say this seems better than that, but it's not about good and bad, because at least I hope we all have the same intention to do well by the earth and to serve our God in that way. I wanted to give credit to Pastor Jeff Loudon, who was supposed to be my co-speaker, and unfortunately he couldn't be here, because he planted the seed last year when he said, you know, at Holden Village, there are three activities that are democratizing, where everybody's the same. One is Vespers. Do that. Dish team. And then garbology. Right? Yeah. And guess which one is the least popular?
It's dish team.
So you might think a little bit about, well, we say one thing, but putting into practice is a little different. So let's start out, when we talk trash, let's start out with some definitions. So when my first trip here to Holden in 79, I was really pleased to hear that this eclectic group of people had come up with a new word for what we in the stuffy elder world were just beginning to call solid waste management, garbology. And so it's been love at first sight, and almost 40 years later, still here. So what are some synonyms that we use for garbage?
Just trash.
Rubbish.
Okay.
Refuse.
Okay.
Recyclables.
Yes. Actually, technically, recyclables are included within the bigger definition of garbage. Good. And so basically, we're talking about things that are unwanted, they're leftovers, they're residue, residuals. And what do we do with garbage? What's the first thing instinctively we want to do?
Get rid of it.
Right. Actually, I should correct myself. The first thing we want to do as toddlers is play with it, right? And then your mother. Okay. So we want to get rid of it. And as somewhere pretty quickly we understand that it smells bad, it's unpleasant, and sometimes it attracts nasty critters. So going back in history, although there are no written records, what do we think are the first humans did?
Buried?
They put heaps out here on the forest where they were living.
Okay. Any other ideas?
They put it next to the fire pits. And now we call them middens or middens?
Middens, yes. Well, Okay, here's my theory. That, as I say, there are no written records. Humans being humans, my first thought is, finish with that, drumstick?
Throw it.
Toss it. The second thing is, find a body of water to dump it in. And we're still doing that today, unfortunately. And the third thing is to put it in a hole in the ground. And by the way, there are a lot of rich guys who made their money saying, oh, we've mined the gravel or sand out of this place, now we have a hole in the ground. Let's charge people to throw garbage in there. In fact, garbage paid for, there's a world-class automobile museum in Tacoma, Washington, which houses the collection of Harold LeMay, garbage man extraordinaire, and built the, that's the car museum with hundreds of vintage collectible cars built on garbage. So anyway, okay, so let's talk about the Holy Trinity. And you know what I mean, right? We're talking about the three R's. Who wants to tell me what one of them is?
Recycle.
Reduce.
Okay, reduce.
Reuse.
And reuse. Okay. So, what do we mean by these? Let's start with reduce. I'll give you a hint. It's short. It's an abbreviation for reduce the amount of garbage going to a landfill. Okay? And some simple examples are what? What might that be to reduce the amount of waste we make?
Consume less.
Compost. Burn some of it.
Burn some? Okay.
Other get a container with yogurt in it?
Just save it and use it for something.
That would be reuse. Thank you, Joe.
Reduce consumption.
Buy less.
Yes, reduce.
Buy less packaging. I mean, buy things with less packaging.
Right. And you said?
Buy less.
Okay, there you go. Consume less. Okay, so we kind of know what these two are. What about recycling? What does that mean to everybody?
They recycle.
Change purpose.
Yeah, like glass. Recycling.
Change its form.
Changing it into something.
Well, repurpose it. Where it's no longer garbage, it's maybe an art object.
Anybody recognize that poorly drawn chasing arrows? So to fit at least the technical definition of recycling, three things have to happen. The first one is you have to collect it and kind of sort it out. The second one is you have to make something with it. And that's typically a raw material for some third process, which is here. And that means somebody has to want to buy whatever it is or buy whatever's inside of it. So anyway, that's where those are. Okay. So how do we think we're doing with recycling?
A lot better than we used to.
Okay.
Some communities a lot better than other communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right. The purchasing end is not going so well, I don't think. We collect it, but I don't think that we're... And it's not really recycling, it's mostly downcycling, isn't it? Usually, it's not like a product becomes the same level of product. You have to find sort of a more degraded use for it, don't you, usually?
Okay, so let me back up. It seems to me that it's almost a law of physics that whatever you do, you're going to make some waste, right? You saw a piece of lumber in half, you've got some sawdust. You sew, you've got some scraps. The only thing I found that doesn't obey that law of physics is cookie dough.
Yeah.
It's never left over, right? There's no waste. Okay, so here's a contemporary example, right? You say to yourself, I could save a lot of time and I wouldn't have to drive my car to go to the store to buy X. I'll order it from Amazon. Mm-hmm. So what happens, right? It shows up at your house. And the first thing you do, you see it's in a corrugated cardboard card, and you open that up. And then what do you find inside?
Bubble wrap.
Bubble wrap. How about those airbags? Yeah. or in the old days, styrofoam peanuts. And then way down at the bottom, it's about a quarter of the size of the box, is whatever you order. So already you've made a whole bunch of waste, or potentially waste, right? It's something you didn't really want to have, unless you're collecting that stuff. So why do we have so much packaging?
Transportation.
It's cheap.
Yes, so transportation, right? It's convenient. It's partly, if you think of the most simple levels, you can't get a hand, go to the store and buy a couple handfuls of whatever it is, because by the time you get home, you won't have it anymore, right? And you may have seen pictures in history books of the old general store, and there'd be cracker barrels, and you reach in, and, or, you know, barrels of flour, sugar, etc. You reach in, and you probably brought your own sack. And remember this? Some of us remember the days when flour and sugar came in cloth bags, and then people made dish towels and aprons and whatever out of it. Well,
dresses.
That's not... Dresses? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Not happening anymore.
Well, because we live... I mean, to me, that was the model of, you know, living in these smaller communities. So you could just easily access, you know, where we've... The wrong, yeah, we've spread out.
Right, the distance that products have to travel to get to where we are. I mean, buying local is great unless you live in Anchorage and you're not growing too much wheat up there, and so if you want flour or sugar cane for that matter. So yes, transportation.
We want things out of season.
Yes, really important point. We want things that are out of season. Do people remember the Tylenol scare?
Yeah.
I think it was in the 70s. And so basically one person, by contaminating some pharmaceuticals, has changed arguably the course of history for us. So if you bought a bottle of Tylenol today, what would it be? In a little kind of cardboard box, and inside there'd be a bottle with an adult proof cap on it. And then inside that, there'd be a little aluminum foil seal. And, you know, so there you have a bunch of packaging, all because one person decided to do that. Okay, let's talk about, one more for reduce. How do you all feel about bottled water?
Not a problem as long as you recycle your bottles.
That's partly true. So let me go with that for a sec. If you're like me, you buy it once or you're at a function. And remember, part of the reason why we have bottled water to begin with is not everybody wants to walk around with one of those because they spill, etc. And it's, you know, they're bulkier and all that. So, or if you have an event and you don't want to wash a whole bunch of glasses, we have water in bottles. And yeah, there's been research about how good that water really is. Is it worth a premium? Well, to my way of thinking, it's we use it mainly for convenience and sanitation purposes. Okay? And they're lighter to carry around. But I've read stuff recently that says, well, you know, washing those out and reusing them, it depends on how good a job you do, and so maybe the bacteria growth isn't so good. The other thing is I've read other articles that say, well, you got to be careful about all the chemicals that went into making the bottle, and are those leaching out over time, or now are you drinking them for a second and third and fourth time? So that's part of it. The other thing that's interesting, and it's not water bottles particular, it has to do with the resin that's used to make 2-liter pop bottles, which goes by the tongue-twisting name of polyethylene terephthalate, or PET for short. And somebody came up with the wonderful idea of shredding that, and they make a wonderful product, trade name Fiberfill, and it makes our fleece, garments, and all that. And it's pretty cool. And we wear a lot of it in the Pacific Northwest. Well, one of the issues with it is somebody has found out that, of course, at some point you have to wash it. And when you do, tiny little fibers break off and they go down the drain, go eventually find their way to streams and oceans, and fish and other aquatic wildlife are ingesting it with foreseeably not very good results. So what seemed like a good idea and a great recycling story at the time is now we're scratching our heads about that a little. So let's go back to reuse. Some of our desire to do that is because we are grandparents or parents that lived through the Depression, where you didn't discard things, that was wasteful. And during the World War II, they would have paper drives and aluminum and steel tin can drives, again, because we wanted to save materials. And some of us have trouble letting go of that. Mm-hmm. So for the reuse, who has a shelf or a closet or a garage full of yogurt containers that they're going to use someday at the store? There's a lot of those things. And some, you know, about 20% of the time, they're actually pretty useful. Mm-hmm. But. And of course, when that goes to an extreme, we call that hoarding, right? Yeah. No longer a recycler or a reuser. You are a hoarder. So what things reusing things seems to work? What kind of?
Furniture.
Furniture?
Good. Clothing.
Clothing. Especially like baby clothes.
Yeah, toys.
Toys, right.
Cars and appliances into rebar.
Yes.
There was a story on the radio about one of the islands around here that has an exchange and people, because getting rid of garbage on the island is really hard. And this guy said, well, I made a greenhouse out of shower doors.
Mm-hmm. So remind me in half an hour from now to talk about that again, Joe, because I know that guy. So recycling, the third R, is where most of us interact with the greater garbology system in the outside world. And sometimes I hear from the public that, oh, I recycle. I haul that stuff to the curb. And then depending on how much of a lecture I want to give, we'll talk. So, let's remind ourselves, why are we recycling now? What are we trying to accomplish?
Reuse.
Reduce
what goes to the landfill.
And help the environment.
Okay, but just specifically the recycle component, not these two.
We've discovered that certain resources aren't renewable.
Right. We want to save materials or resources that are scarce. What about energy? So the thing with energy is it's pretty intuitive that having to mine some more iron ore and smelt it down and then make it into something takes way more energy than just collecting soup cans, right? Same, especially with beer cans, right? Okay, so a couple of historical points for y'all. In the early 1900s, there were people called ragmen that came along and collected your old textiles, and they were eventually made into rags. There were also people that drove horse-drawn carts around cities, and that's where the name carter comes from. And there are still businesses called carting companies. Another term that is not pejorative at all and was a widely respected business in the 1900s was scavengers. In fact, one of the big companies in the waste companies in the San Francisco Bay Area was Oakland Scavengers. So, a little bit of historical. The other thing is in the 1970s, as we became more aware of the environment, maybe because of Rachel Carson's Silent Spring book. We hippies would grab our recycles, bundle them up, put it on our bicycle, and go bicycle to the food co-op, and then deposit our thing dutifully in the various bins. Now notice that in those days, we carried our stuff to someplace. Of course, that's not how it's done now. Okay, so I want to move on to the 1990s. And people may remember these. So what went in these?
Metal,
right. The thing I remember is they were fairly good size. And you fill these up, and they're really heavy. Plus, you have to be a gorilla because you cannot pick up two of these at once. So that meant three trips to the curb, and you hope you didn't have a 200-foot driveway to manipulate. So the other thing that's not all that well known, unless you were actually in the garbage business, is here's a truck. And you had three compartments. And here there was a mechanism where the garbage man would come to the curb, grab that, dump it in here, and it would lift it up and dump it into these compartments, which was really convenient when you got to the place or for the garbage company. Then the stuff came out of the truck in kind of pre-sorted piles. Anybody see a problem with this?
One going to fill up before the other compartments?
Right. So if you're in Milwaukee, maybe this one fills up after 3 minutes, and this, you know, you could go for another half an hour. So it just depends, right? And so that was a great inefficiency in this way of collecting garbage. So fast forward to 2000 as American innovation took over. And you might recognize these.
Yes.
Okay. Well, earlier on, I should back way up. You remember this, right? The classic garbage can? And everything went there, which meant how many trucks went down your street?
One.
Okay. So as we got inventive and really tried to recycle more, we said, well, how about if we have a cart for recyclables and one for garbage, right? And the hope was that this cart would be kind of small because you would be putting so much in this one. But that also means this is the glass, paper, and metals all in there. And we call that co-mingled because they're all mixed together. So what do you think happens when you throw glass bottles in with paper and metal?
They could break.
Pardon me?
They could break.
Yes.
Somebody has to sort them.
Yes. So those are two of the biggest drawbacks. And I can tell you that many cities are rethinking this model. Because when glass breaks, it makes tiny little shards. And those shards tend to get embedded in the paper. And when you go to sell that paper, the paper company, because the way you make paper is or using recycled paper, is you essentially grind it up, mix it with water, and then you run it on high-speed rollers, between rollers, to flatten it out and get these long rolls of paper. And the problem is that glass tears up the rollers. So suddenly a product that you were making good money on, whether it's newspaper or magazines and office paper, suddenly the paper company says, no, I really don't want that stuff. What's the point in getting a cheaper feedstock and then ruining my machinery? So that's, again, one of these little things where it seemed like a good idea at the time. I mean, realistically, that's kind of been our track record with recycling and the whole trying to deal with our garbage.
So what do we do with that? Export it?
Well, okay. One, export, just one second. Exporting means I've made my problem somebody else's.
Right.
And then that becomes a moral issue. And we can deal with that in a second, or in a couple minutes.
But can you just tell me a second? I mean, I don't know what happens with all of that stuff. You know, and a lot of us are making mistakes and putting all the dirty paper in and this and that. I mean, how does it all sort?
Okay.
What happens to that stuff? Where is it?
Okay, so we're going to play the, where does that thing go?
Yeah.
One other component, because some bright person did what we call in the business waste characterization, which means somebody had to sort through a whole bunch of garbage.
Yeah.
And they said, whoa, there's a lot of leaves and what we call yard waste, green, the grass, leaves, small tree trimmings, etc. Why don't we put that in this cart, yard waste?
We call that a green machine.
Mm-hmm. We call it something else. No. And then somebody else said, whoa, there's a lot of food waste there. And if we can compost this yard waste stuff, which not that difficult, we can throw food in there too. Well, as it turns out, composting food is a whole lot harder, and there's a lot of chemistry and biology to that. But basically, it's because food waste contains a lot of fats and oils, and a lot of nitrogen, which is makes the bugs go crazy, and it, as you know, starts to smell really bad. You don't generally go, oh, that pile of leaves smells bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right. Once you get that old pizza in there, fish, that sort of thing. So here we go. How many trucks are coming down my street now?
Three.
So if you look at it from a carbon footprint standpoint, go, whoa. Used to do it all in one fell swoop, and, but to be fair, this one had to, you know, make more trips, right? Because there's only one of it, and you have the same amount of stuff. Because
right.
None of the stuff has gone anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. So that's been one of the things that we have to deal with. So, a couple things. Well, we talked about the problem of glass. One of the reasons why we said we were going to recycle is because we thought it would save us money, right? And it's not really, one of the funny things is that the public thinks that recycling pays for itself?
I don't know. We assumed,
yes.
It couldn't because I have to pay the bill every week.
So what has happened is this. Everybody thought, whoa, those garbage companies, they're going to make a ton of money off this stuff that I throw away, put in here instead of in here. As it turns out, those, because we're on this piece, right, making raw materials, you've sorted it, and they're going to make raw materials. Well, somebody has to buy that and make something with it. And for years, China bought all our excess paper and metal and plastics, and because they're making stuff, and guess what? They were selling it back here, right? Either the containers or the goods inside. And then China figured out that, whoa, we can control this. We're now the world's biggest recycler. We can just say, you know what? We can drive the price down by saying, you know, your stuff's just not meeting our specifications. And it came to be known in the business as the Green Wall of China. No, sorry, you can have your stuff, knowing that American companies were going to go broke collecting this, and the prices kept dropping. And some of you may have heard stories about times when paper and a lot of other commodities were virtually worthless. Couldn't sell them anywhere. And it's only been since we've come out of the recession that the markets have started to recover. But that's one of the big problems. Nobody wants to go broke being green. It's not a very sustainable practice. So, what I would like to do is, I want to ask everybody to stand up. Take a deep breath. Don't poke your neighbor in the eye. and I've got to reorganize myself. You keep doing that, I'll be back in 5. Okay, that's good.
I'm not organized, but.
That makes 2 of us. So when Jeff and I originally talked about this, we said maybe it's time for the 4th R, which is rethink. And all that means is let's go back and look at what we've been doing and say, yes, that made sense before. We're not guilting anybody out. But maybe we should think whether we should keep doing this, or maybe there's some better models or better ways of tackling things. So it's this kind of self-examination. And I don't know about you, but occasionally I find that looking in the Bible, you can get some hints on self-examination. So that's Romans 7:15 and 1 John 1-8. Oh, I did that wrong. 1:8, sorry. 1 John 1:8. Okay, so in Romans, St. Paul writes, I do not understand the things I do. I do not do what I want to do, and I do the things I hate. I do not do the things I want to do, but I do the bad things I do not want to do. Now, maybe Pastor Dave can comment on that translation. To me, the word hate seems a little strong. But again, we're trying to do something good, and look what's happening. The other one, 1 John, we all know it. Or all, at least all you Lutherans do. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. But if we confess our sins, God, who is faithful and just, will forgive our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I don't know about you, I'm still in the early cleansing stage. But, so, and I'm always concerned about quoting out of context, and obviously the Bible wasn't addressing recycling and the environment at the time. So, given what we've talked about so far, and understanding that it's always a trade-off when you do something, I mean, the 3 cans seem like a good idea, but you know, now you got more trucks, more emissions and all that. What can we do to be more creative and maybe come up with some better solutions? So I want to offer a couple examples and then we'll open up for your ideas. So one of them, I talked about the problem with glass. Basically, remember, glass is made out of sand. Sand is not a scarce commodity. Secondly, glass is really heavy to ship. And I can tell you that in the early years of recycling programs, we loved to include glass because when you got figured out what percentage you were recycling, glass was real heavy. It made you look good. The third thing factor with glass, well, not only is it damaging to paper making machinery, but if you wanted to even make more glass bottles rather than paper, not every city has a glass plant in it. So that means you have to haul this stuff a long distance. So that's one of those kind of quandaries we find ourselves in. The potter at Holden Village, bringing a little closer to home, said, you know what? I could buy a different kiln that would melt glass, and maybe we can make some bowls and other things. And I've seen some of those. I haven't had a chance to see if it's being used and all that. But my gut feeling is people aren't going to buy enough bowls to get rid of all their wine bottles and beer bottles that have come up the hill. And I was kind of pleased at orientation to hear the registrar say, well, you know, it'll really help us out if you take out what you brought. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. another method that is being used in the Seattle area, and I'm sure there are in a lot of other areas, what we call reuse stores. Habitat for Humanity runs one. And they're for things like building materials, like you've got half a sheet of plywood left over, or five sheets of chipboard, or windows, sliding doors, and all that stuff, which is what Pete Moe at Orcas Island talked about, was he had built a greenhouse out of old sliding doors or windows. And that's one way of dealing with things. Again, when you think about it, I mean, it's pretty cool, but it's pretty limited, of course. And, you know, when we look at how many times have you thrown away a sliding door, right? Only deals with one small piece of the problem, but definitely it's a good one. One of the things I didn't talk about earlier is once that stuff gets collected and it's taken to what we call a materials recovery facility, or MRF is the acronym. What used to happen is it would get thrown on the floor and then it would go on a conveyor belt. And people would stand, the belt would go up in front of it, and your task would be to grab the brown bottles, and you're either pitching them into a bin there or to the sides, and they'd fall to the bins that are down below you. And yours might be newspaper or aluminum cans or whatever. And frankly, it was pretty nasty work. And I feel some guilt about this, but when we first started having these facilities, people would say, you know, that would be a good job for prisoners or people with disabilities. And now, 20-something years later, I say, well, that's kind of offensive from a social justice standpoint. It's stuff that we wouldn't want to do. We're farming that off to somebody who maybe has less choice about what they could do for a job. So that's one little aspect of completing this triangle of chasing arrows. How do we even sort the things? What American ingenuity being what it is, we've gone to more automated facilities. There are now magnets to remove the steel, and there are other ones that kick the aluminum cans out. And paper, there are machines that sort based on size, and the big things like newspaper float up to the top. It's pretty miraculous. The really cool thing is there's a machine that has a whole bunch of little nozzles, and when a plastic bottle comes by, it sees it with a infrared or ultraviolet light, and it can tell which kind of plastic it is, and a little burst of air flicks it over there, whereas you or I would be staring at it and trying to read the little label and all that. So that's been pretty cool, but to some extent it takes away jobs and it costs a bunch of money. And right now where we are with oil prices, that plastic's not worth very much. It's cheaper for a bottle manufacturer to buy or to use what we call virgin resins made out of petroleum than it is to buy this other stuff where you're not quite sure how clean it is and all that. So we're in this kind of interesting and frustrating market situation as well.
When I have read some of these items, this was about the city of Seattle, it was in the Seattle Times. Some of the items today that Seattle is recycling have such a low market worth that you have to pay contractors to haul those materials away. And the city, Seattle, apparently has computed the cost of sending a cubic yard of whatever the material is to the landfill, and they're willing to pay someone up to that level to haul those materials away. Well, then the problem becomes you have to keep an eye on those people who are hauling those materials away to ensure that they really are recycled and that they aren't just finding they're taking the $70 a ton or however it's measured.
Right.
Hauling it away and just dumping it in somebody else's backyard. And they have found that there are recyclers that do that, and they have found those materials that ended up in Asian countries.
Right, and those were classic stories of misuse of what we, you know, with our good hearts, were trying to do. I mean, there were many stories about shipping containers full of essentially garbage going to the Far East or Africa.
So I'm wondering, what are those materials that have such a low market value?
What are they?
Yeah, which materials are
they? What day is it? No, seriously, because the markets are up and down. They're, for example, remember newspaper, when everybody actually had a physical newspaper? Well, newspapers are printing less and less, and so, of course, that means there's less being recycled. And the newspaper market is not a great market right now. It really depends. I didn't mean to make fun of you. The markets are up and down. They depend on all kinds of global influences. Recycling is not an American industry now. It's controlled by pricing around the world. And so on any day, the price of something could fluctuate wildly, and what you were collecting for the last month could be worthless, could be worth a lot. And so that's one of the things that makes this a tough issue. Yes?
The question to me is not that. Rather, in the old model, you paid to haul it off and put it in a landfill. In the new model that you just spoke about, you pay to haul it off to some other purpose, but you got to pay for it. Is that less costly than putting it in a landfill, both in terms of present economics and long-term economics?
Well, I was with you until you said present economics still, long-term economics.
Now, present economics would be where the dollars change hands in the company. The long-term economics are what are you going to do with the landfills 50 years from now?
Right, and that's the part that's really difficult to discern.
But you got to make a decision. So if you can't discern it, then you shouldn't be dealing with it. Right.
You shouldn't.
If you can't make a decision, you shouldn't be dealing with it. That's a.
No, you can. You may not make a decision that 10 years from now or 5 years from now you say is a wise decision, but you have to do something with it right now. Because remember at the beginning, right, he said garbage smells bad.
Right.
And I guess what other things do we look at when we say, well, I'm making a value judgment, and I like the way that piece of clothing looks. I mean, any two different shirts or dresses, both keep you warm, but one might look a whole lot better. And so we make some kind of value judgment there. The problem is, and what really complicates this is garbage more a higher priority for us than, say, clean water? Or justice for this group, or whatever. One of the ironies when we first started talking about the environmental crisis in this country, I was flying cross country and I thought, you know, people were talking about landfill. We're running out of landfill space. I'm going, whoa. One thing the United States of America has is a lot of land. And I said, if that landfill fills up, we could build another one. It's like cars. You ran out of that year model, make some this year's model. And we can continue to do that. The funny thing about landfills is after you have the hole in the ground and you put environmental protections like liners and that sort of stuff, it's what we call a volume-based business. Every additional ton, it's cheaper to put in there because you already paid for a lot of the expensive stuff. And companies make a lot of money landfilling, but if the public wants them to also collect recyclables, they're happy to do that, and they are able to make money. The question I ask, and I'm sorry, I should have prefaced this by saying, I don't necessarily have any answers. I can tell you, well, this might happen if you do this, but I can't tell you if that's necessarily the best thing to do for 10 or 15 or 100 years down the road. And that's what makes this environmental issue so thorny, so difficult for us?
We live in Yakima, and it seemed like we don't have citywide recycling, and the reason we don't is because we have an enormous landfill. The trucks only have to drive about 5 miles out of the city, and so so in Yakima, it's cheaper for the city to pay the landfill costs than to institute a recycling program. If you just consider the actual cost to the city.
Right.
If you consider all the costs to society.
And I don't know about you, has anybody spent a whole lot of time thinking about the economics and the pros and cons of all these choices?
No, something was huge not many years ago about whether we should be burning, right? I mean, what you do you dig a hole, do you burn some of it because you don't want to end up all building housing developments on top of
Okay, so good point, Holly. So let's talk about what other countries do. Back in the 80s, well, it was going on before then, certain European countries, especially Sweden and Germany, and to a lesser extent France and Spain, would burn their garbage. And the incinerators were built right in town. And the government was very careful about regulating. They had very high environmental standards. And I watched in this country, it was really unfortunate. Coal burning plants get away with much less stringent environmental regulation than do incinerators. But during the 80s, there was a huge environmental movement in the United States, and everybody was worried about dioxins. And that basically shut down the idea of burning garbage in this country. Now, one of the things about burning garbage is what you get out of it is mostly the energy that was stored in whatever material you burn. To some extent, you can get out metals because they melt and they fall out in the ash. And we do have ways of containing the ash, and it's a much smaller volume than what the garbage that made it would be. But because the public is so much against it in this country, that hasn't had a future. And had oil, for example, not become so inexpensive, we might have been saying, well, gee, maybe we should have been burning garbage to generate electricity. I mean, we know out here we're the beneficiaries of some fabulous hydropower, which is clean, but we don't know how long that's going to be available, right? Depends on snowpack and glaciers and all that sort of stuff. So things come and go, and I guess one of my hopes is that people keep thinking about this every once in a while and asking themselves, gee, seemed like a good idea at the time. Is it still a good idea? One of the things I want to leave you as takeaways, and then we can answer some more questions, are this.
Easy.
Not so easy being green. The second thing, I take some hope from Maya Angelou, who said, you did what you know how to do, and when you knew better, you did better. And as we go along, we stumble, we make some progress, we have some failures. And that's at least made me feel better about being in this business. Now, if I can spend 5 minutes, I'd like to talk to you about how that relates to Holden Village. Because, of course, as long as I've been coming here, don't you think we feel pretty smug about how green we are? We feel like we're making an effort. Mm-hmm. And we had a certain way of doing things. You know, for many years we were sorting our recyclables. In fact, it's my opinion that Holden Village garbage is the most picked over in the entire state of Washington. And if you've been on Garbo duty, you know what that's like. And we've been working hard to compost our food waste. Because one thing that makes Holden Village different from a lot of places, even though we're a small city or a village, right? There are four essential services, right? Water, sewer, electricity, and garbage. And if any one of those fails, at some point you have to close the village, right? And so we've been moving along for, you know, 25, 30 more years than that, and before, until the remediation. And when the remediation happened, a contractor came in, brought in a big dumpster, and a construction crew that frankly wasn't going to be very motivated to recycle. So Holden went through a 3 or 4 year period where we didn't have that institutional memory and that inertia to recycle the sort and compost, because there was that big dumpster there. And so in the last couple of years, as we come out of the construction cycle, we're trying to have new systems, and we have an opportunity to rethink and redo what we, how Holden handles its garbage. So the core of the new action, it comes down to a couple pieces of equipment. One is we have a couple of round, big plastic vessels called earth tubs, and we're trying to do our food waste composting in those. Everything else goes to what we call a baler, which works like a hay baler. It compresses various materials. I forgot to say, years ago we used to have an incinerator, but that's long gone. So with the baler, we're now able to bale, compact various materials like paper and milk jugs, metal, you know, cans, steel and aluminum cans, store them. And now they take up a much smaller volume on the truck that has to drive down the hill, get on the barge, go to Chelan, go to the recycling center, where I don't think they get paid much of anything for those materials. And that's the plan for garbology at Holden Village right now. There are many things that need to be fine-tuned. I'm hoping you'll take the trek up the hill. Allie, the garbologist, will explain what she's been doing. And we're going through startup. But it's all very interesting when you have to. It's one thing to say, I want to protect the environment and save materials and save energy and all that. But putting into practice is quite a challenge. So hope you guys will attend that session tomorrow. I think it's 1 o'clock or 1:45, something like that. Anyway, appreciate your attention. Are there other questions?
Daryl, so you talked about value judgments.
Yes.
And so this huge piece was disposable diapers and how awful disposable diapers are. But the amount of water, which is really one of our most precious resources on this earth, that is used to clean the cloth diapers is huge. But, you know, and I know with Reduce, they say we actually use less plastic. We use more plastic products for our food now, but we're using less plastic because we've made them so thin and smaller lids and all of those kind of things. But tell me about the diaper situation.
That's one we always try to avoid. I think part of it depends on where you live and the availability of water. Not having been a parent of infants for a long time, we happen to use a diaper service. But there are times when, you know, let's say you're on a road trip. Are you wanting to bring that stuff back with you? Maybe not. And so convenience, let's face it, we're willing to pay not only monetary costs for convenience and aesthetics. But, that's what's difficult for being in my position is it depends on the people, and it's really every single person's value judgment on what they're willing to weigh. My thinking in general is you can use disposables when you're traveling. or times when it's just really awkward to have the stuff sitting around.
But even that product has improved.
Right.
It's more and more natural things.
Right, using more natural fibers, et cetera, like that.
And if you're a mom with a little kid who's going to wake up in the middle of the night because they're wet and they feel wet versus the new diapers, they never ever feel wet.
They get a rash.
You start saying...
Rashes.
Yeah, you start... And yet, a lot of young moms get great grief because, well, my child is real diapers.
Then there's another problem with that, because those diapers work so well, the child is delayed in potty training,
yes,
so then you're using those disposable diapers another year.
Pull-ups.
Yeah.
And then you move on to pull-ups.
Because if they're never wet and uncomfortable, there's no reason to potty train.
Just 1 second. And I just had a horrifying thought. It's just not mothers of infants. Hello. We're approaching the other end. Has anybody heard of an adult diaper service?
Yeah.
It's probably one of those unmentionables. So, just 1 second.
Dave?
There are different consequences to these decisions. For instance, one of the current, explosive use of something, which has seems to need very little going for it, but it is widely used as plastic straws.
Ah, yes.
They are virtually indestructible, and they last forever, and they have entered into the gyre in the ocean, and yet you cannot get a paper straw.
They used to be paper. Wax paper.
Well, that's a great comment, but I think that's one of those areas where consumer or citizen protest, or at least voice. I think it was my understanding that Starbucks was going to switch having the little plastic coffee stirrers, because those are really a problem for wildlife. The other example I wanted to bring up, remember there was a time when you paid extra for recycled content paper and it had little speckly things in it?
Yes.
I went to Staples Office Supply the other day and I counted that there were about 10 or 12 different reams of copy paper, printer paper from different companies. And I could only find two that said anything about recycled content. A couple of them said FSC, forest something something, and it's some kind of...
Something. It's forest sustainable forestry or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a certification.
Right. And yet when I went on their website, I'm sorry, it was pretty mealy-mouthed. It didn't ever say, well, for this seal you get, you know you're getting 40% recycled content, etc. And I think one of the things for us as consumers, we don't often say, hey, write to the manufacturer and say, you know, I'm not buying that until you don't put it in 40 layers of packaging. We don't exert that pressure. I think Starbucks is a good, easy target, plus they seem to be pretty amenable to listening to things like that. So anyway, good point. Somebody else have a question back there?
Well, something I really struggle with, too, are the use of electronics, and you just, you know, it's part of our life to be on, you know, we have our computers and our cell phones, and then disposing of those and the terrible things that happen with that, and, you know, it's so ingrained. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, especially when everyone has to update to the absolute
right, it doesn't last
thing that came long. Out yesterday. Yes. The thing that came out the day before isn't good enough anymore.
I know.
Apple has polluted the world with their upgrades.
Yeah. Well, if I had no sin, I would cast a stone, but I'm not able to do that. And I think that's one of the hardest things, along with everything else that each of us is concerned about, is to sit and think, you know, why am I doing that? That thing over there looks really attractive, but do I really want to And part of it is that rethinking process of saying, well, if I didn't spend $800 on an iPhone 8 but stuck with my iPhone 6, could I do something more constructive for the world with that amount of money? And I don't ask myself that very often, so I can't ask you to do that, or I can ask you to do that.
Well, I have an example right here at Holden, how complicated these decisions are. I remember sitting in on a session, this was back when my remediation was just in the planning stages, and the operations manager was kind of outlining the plan. There were several people in that group who, from a scientific background, who questioned whether the huge expenditure of money, granted it was money from the mining company, but looking at the overall picture, whether that expenditure of money was really, whether the cost was worth the actual risk of pollution to the environment presented by this mine. So that there wasn't unanimous agreement even on that.
Exactly.
And I suspect that that would have never occurred. Well, you know how cities, important people in important neighborhoods, they get their potholes fixed first?
Oh, yes.
I suspect this would have never occurred had Holden Village and the kind of people who were involved with Holden Village were not part of the process. You know, if this had just been sitting out in the wilderness without a Holden Village here, that mining company would have never spent, what'd they spend, $80 million?
They spent $570 million.
Didn't it start out at 80?
Started out at 100, and the first
estimates
were 100 million, roughly.
Oh, I thought it was, and now it's 500 million?
570.
Well, then those, a billion those billion. People with the science background that argued when it was 100 million would have a much better argument at 500 million.
That's right.
So, Terrell, I'm looking for some assurances here.
All right.
Whoa! I'm questioning everything at the moment. So we flatten our cardboard, we take it out to the curb, we separate our plastic and our metals and our glass, and we compost our food and we mulch our grass. Are we doing anything right? I mean, are we making a difference? I guess that's...
That's two separate and equal questions. In my mind, for today, that sounds wonderful. I appreciate that effort. And not because I do similar sorts of things, but I think to a large extent that's making the best of what we have now. The second question, I'm sorry, the second question was...
Are we making a difference? I mean...
Are you making a difference?
I mean, is it any... How different is it than throwing everything in the trash can and putting it in the landfill?
So I'm going to wimp up. Could I see a show of hands? Are Dan and Heidi making a difference?
Makes them feel good, if nothing else. I hate to tell you, once you get to where you are, there's no going back.
No, true. But we think we're making a difference. The question is, are we actually making a difference? Because we're trying, I know, but, and is there, I mean, I love the idea that you're leaving us with a rethink, but it's kind of pissing me off at the same time.
Is that recording?
You know what I mean, though, but it, rethink, but it's like, how do we know what we're doing is actually making a difference, other than just the inquiry state now is what you're setting us up for, is to... All, you know, keep learning and keep trying to do the right thing, and know what your recyclers are doing with the stuff you're putting on the curb.
Okay.
I mean, that's kind of...
So I'm going to say, if I were Pastor Dave and you asked something about some moral issue, I would guess that the big part of it is you need to think about it and pray about it. Oh yeah, that's part of the equation. And then act with your best judgment for that time, knowing that you're a human being with all your shortcomings. I don't have good answers for it, and the problem is, and we could spend many hours talking about public meetings and, you know, what seems to be best for a group of people. And there's no, that's the problem, there's no hard and fast, and yet in many other arenas of our life, we make a decision and we act on something, and sometimes it appears to work out better, sometimes it doesn't. I think one of the things that for me, I have to do is say, I thought about it carefully, and I made a judgment, and I acted in a certain way. Whether it turns out to be good, my view is, that's God's problem. Results are God's problem. My job is to show up and do the best I can right now. And maybe that's a really wimpy way to do it, but it's worked for a while.
And so forgive far. Ourselves when we find out later, you know what, that wasn't the right way, but it was the best decision for today.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that what we say when we raise kids?
Yeah.
Yes.
You have to go back, though, and look at our heritage. I was raised in the Seattle area. In 1965, the city of Seattle essentially discharged all its sewage raw in the Puget Sound.
Right.
And those beaches were closed to swimming and all activity.
Right.
And we used to say the Sound was where the ship met the sea. It discharged some poorly treated water into Lake Washington. We often couldn't swim there because it was so polluted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I remember going up and down the roads as a kid, they were just lined with litter and beer cans.
Right.
I used to go backpacking, and people would dump their garbage at the, you know, up in the mountains. We've had so much progress.
We're perfect.
Yeah.
We can work on it.
We can.
We need to celebrate what we've done. And I hear all this discussion about this cleanup not being quite right. And I say bullshit. That we have come so far with this cleanup. The state of Washington designates waters as class AA, which is pristine, down to class D is where fish don't live. The whole drainage of Lake Chelan is AA pristine. You cannot damage it. That's just the way the rules are. The only class D stream in all of the state of Washington is Railroad Creek right here because it kills fish. The only one in the whole state. Look at the progress. Yeah, it's way too expensive. We need to put our arms around Rio Tinto and say thank you. I don't see that happen. I mean, I think Rio Tinto are heroes for cleaning up that mess.
Mm-hmm.
But we worry too much about the trivia. We don't worry about the big picture. And let's look at that big picture because we have come so far in Rio Tinto. I mean, I'm a real critic of the mining industry and the mess they've made throughout this country. But Rio Tinto is my hero.
And what's that saying? Don't let the good be the enemy of the perfect.
Perfect be the enemy of the good.
Perfect be the enemy of the good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that passion and perspective. I want to say namaste to all of you. I definitely see the Spirit of God in all of you. And I'm very appreciative. Hope you participate in the other... the encyclical part, now that you've loaded yourself on the recyclable part. Anyway, thank you very much.